Hi, Radicals, and thanks for tuning in. This is Sam here from the Radical Writing Podcast. Some of these texts stretch content as experimentally as they do form, and this is a heads up that some episodes feature discussions of a particularly sensitive nature. For example, we may be reading and then elaborating on extracts which feature swearing, violence, and sexual content. And discussions will be compassionate and empathetic, but also, in order to accurately reflect the text, explicit. Engaging with these challenging topics is often key to the author's technique and central to the story they're telling. But they can be difficult subjects to discuss and listen to. Listen for the trigger warnings at the start of the episode, and if you prefer to avoid that episode, do check out another one from the series. And if you think that the series as a whole may not be suitable for you, that's okay too. If you are comfortable listening on, now is the time to pop your headphones on or to find a private space. Hello, Radicals, and welcome to the weird and wonderful literary world of the Radical Writing Podcast, the series dedicated to the best in contemporary experimental or innovative writing. This is episode one, Phoebe Powers, The Book of Days. My name is Sam Kemp, and I'll be your host. I'm a poet and lecturer in creative writing. Today, my guest is Rebecca Newby, and we've both chosen a favourite poem from the collection and prepared some questions for one another. Trigger warning associated with this text, before we go any further, is sexual content. Book of Days is a poetry collection by Phoebe Power. It charts the poet's journey along the ancient Camino, the 790-kilometre pilgrimage from the Pyrenees to Santiago de Compostela. The sequence travels across northern Spain in a meandering three-verse form, threading together observations on faith, the landscape, and fellow pilgrims. The poems are in a numbered sequence entitled by location and shift through a series of voices and perspectives on modern pilgrimage. It was published by Carcinet Poetry in 2022. Rebecca, welcome. I'll let you introduce yourself.
Thanks, Sam. Hi, everyone. My name's Rebecca Newby. I am an assistant professor in English at Northeastern University London. And I'm here today, I think, because I have a loose interest in pilgrimage, but medieval pilgrimage, to be precise.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I thank you so much for coming on. And when we first started talking about the series and I came across this particular text, I thought, yes, me and Rebecca have had many interesting conversations about pilgrimage around the staff coffee machine. Yes. And I wanted to kind of bring in that medieval idea because I think there's something resolutely medieval about the term pilgrimage and the idea of pilgrimage. But it's something that's still happening today, something that still goes on and is very enduring for many people. And I wanted to kind of get into some of those reasons as to why people have pilgrimaged. Is that a word in the past? Is it going to be used as a verb? Pilgrimaged?
Pilgrimaged?
Let's say we've
doesn't
created
exactly
a new word already.
Roll off the tongue.
Doesn't.
Traveled, journeyed. Yeah.
But there's something that's more kind of spiritual about it and something more special about it. And so I wanted to kind of talk about this book and maybe we can make some connections with the medieval as well. Shall I dive straight into one of my favourite poems right at the beginning? So this is page 73 and it spans over to page 74. And I wanted to, if I have time, I might go over to a different poem.
73 to 74.
So 73 to 74. So this is just at the end of 73.
So this is from 17?
Yes, section 17. Okay. So I should say that the whole collection is one long journey. At this point, we are about a third of the way into the pilgrimage. The cold sends us indoors for black tea and something to eat for breakfast. The girl is there with a haze of gold hair tied back. She tells us she got ill a few days ago and slept for 22 hours with a fever. Her body had to get sick. Now she feels lighter. Her voice is wandering and generous, like the edge of a wave over sand. And Lise and I walk on together. She explains that her mood's been up and down, like a teenager. Sometimes she prefers to walk by herself, but then she misses people. Thinks, maybe they don't like me. Yes, I say, I know. They're sometimes alone, sometimes together, sometimes two and sometimes many, sometimes three or four and sometimes alone. The lurch and throw of it. So the reason that I quite like this section is for that phrase right at the end, for one, the lurch and throw of it. And this seems to be a theme that runs throughout the collection, this kind of stopping and starting along the pilgrimage, and stopping and starting with different people. And this is kind of the other thing that I'm kind of keen to see if you found this as well. This is a book that is very much about the pilgrims rather than the pilgrimage, with much more focus on the people that she meets and describing them and getting to know them in various ways. And the story is actually told through them largely. And I thought that was really, really intriguing. And it's something about a pilgrimage that I hadn't really considered before. I kind of considered a pilgrimage to be quite a personal thing, quite an individual thing. But throughout this text, the protagonist is constantly coming across other people walking together, maybe for a few days. Then you bump into somebody else, and then you bump into somebody else, and people know each other, people talk about each other. And you have these kind of strange shared connections that come from it, the lurch and throw of this rhythm of walking as a group and rhythm of walking individually.
I'm chuckling because as you said rhythm, I read the word rhythm in my notes.
Brilliant.
But this is on page 19, and I was just a small aside here. I was just struck by the stilted rhythm of and breaks in the lines and here the form matches the content or the theme that you describe there. But anyway,
I think that's a really good way of putting it. Actually, the stilted sense of rhythm, because there's certain sections, being the section that I just read out there, the first half of that was a kind of prosaic paragraph, just a sort of straightforward paragraph. You know, there doesn't seem to be much kind of line break choice sort of going on. There's obviously sort of choice made, but it's not kind of emphasizing a rhyme or a particular rhythm. But the second half of that then breaks into, yes, I say, I know, the sometimes alone, sometimes together, sometimes two, and sometimes many. Breaks into this little kind of fragment of rhythm. And I think that's what I really admired about the entire collection. It had that kind of stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. Like you say, content and form sort of coming together.
Yes. I'll just pick up on what you said about the collective here and how her journey, her personal journey, is told through these many perspectives, let's say, or many characters. And that really reminds me of my interest, or where my interest in pilgrimage comes from, which is Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, which I mentioned in the last podcast I was on here, the other podcast that I was on with you. And in that collection, you have the frame narrative, which is the pilgrimage from Southwark in London to Canterbury to see to pay homage to the tomb of Thomas à Becket. And then you have the individual tales within the frame story. And through those stories, you learn more and more about the different figures and about their relationships to each other within the pilgrimage, within the context of that frame story. So there's an interesting parallel there. Yeah. And just while we're on that subject, so I don't go on about the Canterbury Tales for the entire podcast, I do wonder, and this is actually one of the questions I jotted down, whether Phoebe Power, I assume she is, because it's one of the more famous pilgrimage stories, of course, wonder whether Power is, great name, by the way, Phoebe Power.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Power is thinking about the Canterbury Tales, because on page 37, fairly early on, she talks about how a marriage theme has arisen at their dinner. I think it's the first dinner they have as a group, as a collective. And this really reminded me of the marriage group, which is a collection or a kind of editorial grouping of some of the Canterbury Tales, which are focused on the theme of marriage.
Nice. Okay, gotcha.
That's another little digression there for you.
Well, you're very welcome to bring in the Canterbury Tales, because I feel as though it's going to come into quite a lot of what we have here, maybe. I like that idea of each section, each person being like kind of like a vignette, a little story within the overall whole.
A poetic portrait.
A poetic portrait, yes. Exactly.
And but they're not self-contained. They sort of crop up repeatedly, or certainly some figures keep, Annalise,
yes,
for example.
Yes.
She crops up quite a lot in this sort of ebb and flow, don't they, with the rhythm of the poetry. And part of what you quoted just now, or what you read just now, also brings me to another one of my major comments slash questions, which is the repeated references to water throughout. Her voice is wandering and generous, like the edge of a wave over sand. Did you notice this throughout?
No, I didn't.
Really?
I didn't notice that.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny, isn't it, when you're reading something and you get something in your head and then you just see it everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were to flick through this, I have so many annotations about water.
What's the role of that?
Well, that was going to be my question to you. I was hoping that you would have noticed it. I mean, first things first, the rhythm of the poetry, that kind of ebb and flow of the lines, these different figures, different voices, perspectives coming in and out. That's quite a kind of the formal flow of that reminded me of water.
Yeah.
And if I just look to the very first page, the flames were soft and mobile, like water. I thought again of the candles swimming in their pools. Could I be baptized? I mean, that's just the first page. As well, another formal point, there are no speech marks anywhere.
That's
very fluid.
Yeah.
That adds to the kind of fluidity. Let me see if I can find
it. It does add to the fluidity. And I wonder if it also adds to, there's some confusion as to who's speaking, which I think is on purpose.
Yes,
it kind of adds
very
to that effect.
Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah.
Page 36. So much further on now. She's also named Jin Young, but older, more fluent and compact, light reflecting from her surfaces as she turns a Rubik's Cube. I mean, another fantastic reference to water. But these crop up repeatedly.
Interesting.
Across the entire thing, right up to the end. And that sort of struck me as being quite significant. And you're saying you're not sure significance of that might be.
I think you're right. It's just something I hadn't come across, which is really fun.
Well, I have an idea. I'm going to answer my own question.
You can.
The cover, beautiful cover of this book, has a row of scallop shells. Do you remember the conversation we had with a colleague of ours in relation to pilgrimage about the significance of these shells?
Vaguely, but go on.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm actually not an expert on the history of this, but this particular pilgrimage that Phoebe Power, I think it was her, we can assume it's her that did it rather than the character.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
To Santiago
de Compostela.
Yeah. Yes, I was going to make a hash of pronouncing that. On this particular pilgrimage, which supposedly, I believe, is to the tomb of one of Jesus's 12 apostles, James, is directly associated with the scallop shell because these shells apparently were found all over the coast in that part of Spain.
Right.
And so, you know, going back hundreds and hundreds of years ago, people collected them to show that they'd been, as a token, to show that they'd been on this pilgrimage.
Mm.
And I believe when Londoners arrived back into London, if they'd gone on that pilgrimage, they would toss them into the River Thames. So I think the water references.
Yeah.
I mean, it's on the cover, isn't it? The shells.
Yeah.
I think it's all part of that.
So it feels like a good kind of, so a religious reference and also this sort of
to this
water
particular pilgrimage.
Oh, and
the significance of the shells as a token that you collect having been on this pilgrimage.
So this is quite a famous pilgrimage. This is the Santiago de Compostela. This is across northern Spain, or starting in the Pyrenees. And I think that was one of the things I was most intrigued by. And I suppose this is why the poet picks up on it so much, is who is taking this pilgrimage in the 2020s? Who decides to do this, to take months out of their lives or quit their job or
get eaten to death by mites or bed bugs.
This is also a tough journey. This is a really, really difficult journey. There's a lot of hardship that's along here, which I kind of want to talk about as well in that connection with pilgrimage.
Yeah.
But this was what I was interested in, is why do this? Like, what is the reason to pilgrimage in 2020, in the 2020s? And I think that it feels as though maybe that multiplicity of voice is kind of coming in here, that the author is constantly taking on other people's voices and other people's descriptions.
And stories?
And stories, is it in an effort to kind of to get to that reason as to why we're here? Because I think that that reason is never kind of overtly given at the beginning. There's never a kind of overt aim. It's partly, it seems, a pursuit of language, of the kind of descriptions that they come across, and a pursuit of just that idea of pilgrimage. And of course, there is a religious reason too, which is kind of filters throughout. So I guess my question is, what was your sense of what the reason was that this person is pilgrimaging, that all the other characters are on this pilgrimage as well?
Well, to answer your question, I will turn to page 146 and just read a short passage which I think sums this up.
Great.
She writes, and they are, it's towards the end, and they're in a chapel. And she writes, each, meaning I suppose each one of them, each lights a candle on the altar tray. Most pray for loved ones at home who are ill or going through a divorce. And I feel that their world is too small. This chapel cramped, the man at the front too old, and the practice antiquated, missing the central point. I almost stand and pray for gender equality in the church. But I swallow and ask instead that we might be better stewards of the earth. So I think this sums up nicely what all these different people are doing here. In some ways, they're asking for a better world.
And
they're
that.
Trying to discover a better world, better connection.
Yeah.
Understanding, greater understanding of others through this journey. And it struck me actually that it's about postmodern spirituality.
That's a nerd's in this phrase. Yeah. I can kind of see that.
And it's funny to me because I have increasingly seen references to pilgrimages cropping up even since I finished my research project in 2020. Where I was laser focused on this topic and no one else was really bothered. I've seen an increasing number of books, TV shows. There's a BBC show about where they get celebrities on a pilgrimage of sorts.
Yeah.
And many of these people engaged in this practice are not overtly religious. Some of them are, but many are not doing it for the sort of traditional, let's say, historical reasons. You know, if you were a pilgrim in the medieval period, like Marjorie Kemp, who's famously wrote about her travels and her pilgrimages, it would be purely for Christian reasons. And it might not be a huge journey like this. It could just be to the church on the other side of the field from where you lived. That would also be classed as a pilgrimage.
Right.
And for them, life was a spiritual journey, and it was all, life was the big pilgrimage, the great pilgrimage. So I suppose a lot of these people are trying to connect with spirituality in a way that's not overtly Christian.
What
can we say?
And
I think what it shows, I mean, we don't always know the why, because everyone's why will be slightly different, but it shows, I think, this increasing desire for something like a pilgrimage, like the traditional pilgrimage, shows that people are trying to connect. There's a sort of deep need for something spiritual, even if it's not your conventional religions, I think, in our postmodern society.
That's the exact impression I got, I think, so I'm kind of glad you said that, is that there was a drive towards something. There was maybe this is what is being referred to here, missing the central point that the church or the chapel they're in this ritual that they're watching being performed.
was missing the central point. And that central point seemed to be what everyone was kind of getting at. And lots of the people that she comes across have their various reasons. Like you say, they may be going through a divorce, they may be going through other life events, and they want to kind of make sense of it.
I'm sort of remembering a previous conversation that we had, though, about this book, just very briefly, when we were giving our initial reactions to it, I think, over the summer. And I think it was you who said, is it just a sort of backpacking for the middle-aged?
Yes.
And
well, no, middle, the kind of medieval, this seems like a kind of medieval gap back, here.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a bit like that. But I wonder if, and I reflect on that, and I agreed at the time, but I wonder if that's one of the points that she's making.
Yeah.
Because she says at one point, 137, this page is, and section 37, in the end, it's all consumption.
Yes,
She writes, for you, would you say there's something spiritual in this experience?
Yeah.
Question. In the end, it's all consumption. We get up every day and eat, buy more, spend, but we aren't contributing anything. It can't go on forever. We have to go back to work. So there's almost an inbuilt awareness of
the indulgence of it. Maybe.
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Even though it shouldn't be an indulgence.
No, but it is a bit like that, isn't it, in the modern day? People are doing these things sometimes for the wrong reasons to get that Instagram picture, to get that little check mark on their bucket list. And there's something quite hollow about that. And I wonder whether, you know, she is sort of also commenting on that. She's not shying away from that issue.
She's not. And I suppose she's not dressing up the pilgrimage to be something that it isn't.
Right.
And there's times at which it's very, even mundane. It's very kind of everyday in some of the description.
Yes, and yes.
It's kind of, and but I think that works quite nicely for the subject that she's getting at. I should say it's a long book for a poetry collection. It's a very, very long collection. And that, again, builds that sense of journey. But that idea of that kind of medieval gap year, I like that kind of critique that seems to be happening here. Because a lot of the people that she meets, some of them seem to be really, really wonderful. And a lot of them just don't seem to be. They seem to just be there for their own reasons, or that they are very, very friendly to begin with. And something will kind of turn it. And they just don't seem particularly enlightened in a way that she initially thought that they were. There's a kind of disappointment sometimes in the people. And I thought that was lovely and sincere and very, very honest. I think it's a very honest collection as a whole.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think, and that makes me wonder. There were some moments where I thought she was a bit heavy-handed with some of her similes, for example, or some of it was a bit on the nose. But then I wonder whether that is sort of intentional and intended to reflect some of these different perspectives or different feelings, or you were talking about how some of it is a bit mundane. Maybe that's all part of it.
I think it is.
Or are you not sure?
Yeah, I think it is. I think for me, I was expecting or hoping for a greater kind of attempt at describing something very, very difficult to describe, which would be something kind of mystical.
Something more that speaks to the eternal.
That's kind of, and I suppose I was thinking that a collection on pilgrimage would be about those heights, would try and kind of get up to describing the exact kind of things that is the sort of magic of ritual or faith or belief.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the fact, and I think I'm understanding more and more the lack of that. There's certain moments in here, and I've highlighted a few actually, where I think there is a beautiful sense of something happening between the group and something holy or spiritual that is happening. But those moments are quite few and far between. It's a lot of it is about the blisters, the pasta, the kind of vegetables that they can come across.
You know, there's a realism to that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I also have to say, I think there are some moments of absolute brilliance in this, and some of the verbs are deftly used, I would say. And I wouldn't say I have a kind of favourite page or so like you, but there are certainly some descriptions and images which I thought were great. And there's one under the subtitle The Greenhouse on page 113. And she writes, "Imagine a miniature version of yourself. You are standing on your tongue. Then you jump down the trapdoor black of your throat. You are in the stomach cavity, full of bright shimmering colours. Here you are transformed. You are the self you wish to be. We lie in Shavasana on the seabed. Our body cracks in fragments. As we breathe in, the fragments break off and drift apart in the currents above us. Breathing out, they settle back and reconstruct our body in an arrangement different to before."
It's lovely.
It's just lovely. Again, look at those references to water.
Yes.
But I loved that. I thought that was such a vivid image of the tongue and leaping from your tongue, diving from your tongue down your throat. Yeah. How wonderful.
I highlighted that as well, actually.
Oh, really?
And I think partly because of the fragment idea, the collection as a whole is quite fragmented. We have certain lines that are by themselves, and the form is fragmented, and paragraphs and
yes, but at the same time, it's fluid as well.
Yeah, it is.
It feels fluid to me and almost lyrical at times. So I hate to use this word again. I've used this elsewhere, but it's a sort of paradoxical. It's sort of a both fluid and fragmented. How is that possible?
I think it's maybe, I'm going to steal a word from you earlier, a kind of stuttering river that we have.
Oh, that's different. I said stilting
on.
So that
oh,
you've...
Oh, stilting.
No, that's good.
Let's go with stuttering.
You're walking thesaurus. It's very good.
I highlighted that section as well. And actually, I want to read out a section which is just opposite from that, which I think I was kind of talking about, why do this? Why? What is the change that occurs in people? And this one seems to sum it up perfectly. So this is on page 115, just opposite from where that lovely description was. "I first met Simon 100 days ago in Pamplona. Now I hardly recognize him. His body seems to occupy more space. The particles that make him up somehow drifted apart. His hair is looser, opened out in a wave and fanning his shoulders, striped with a colored band. His expression softer and more distant. Rachel can't resist this, and yet they are in the garden, making shapes with their bodies under her tutelage." And I think I quite liked it because I thought for a description of pilgrimage, for a description of what you may gain, what you may learn, rather, from this, that his body seems to occupy more space, the particles that make him up. I thought that was really, really nice.
Yeah, I think she's definitely, it comes back to, I think, a point you made earlier in passing, which is that she is disrupting language in this, just as their identities are being disrupted through this journey. There are a few references to Rubik's Cubes, which just struck me as perhaps having some association with that idea or that theme. And then on page 64, she says, she writes, "I'm starting to forget the order of the letters in place names. I am not the only one." So there is this disruption, collective disruption of
place.
Identity and place and language.
Yeah.
That she's drawing attention to, I think, absolutely.
Which I think you get on any long journey, on anything that is a break from that consumerism that they mentioned, even though she's kind of highlighting that actually you can never really break from that. It seems to be what we're doing even more so on this journey.
However, the final point that she makes, did you make any notes about this? The very last page, 178, she writes, "You don't have to go anywhere to be on pilgrimage." So I think, and this sort of caught my attention because, sorry in advance, but in the Middle Ages, and I think we've talked about this before, but in the Middle Ages, if you were a monk, right, and you were in your monastery, you were cloistered in your monastery, you couldn't just get up and go on a year-long pilgrimage or a six-month pilgrimage somewhere, even as a monk, right, of a religious order. And so what some, particularly monks, but also other members of the clergy would do, was do a sort of virtual pilgrimage. No kidding.
Yeah, I love that.
They would have a map that wasn't necessarily the kind of maps that we can envisage, not a geographically accurate one, but a map that depicted the pilgrimage in some way, which perhaps they could move around and trace the pathway that you would take. And the map might amplify important locations along the way so that they could experience the pilgrimage from the monastery.
Mm.
And this really reminded me of this because I think she's suggesting here at the end, I know what you've just said about perhaps you can't get away from consumerism unless you do a big trip like this, but perhaps you can in your mind with the right tools. And I think that's part of, I hesitate to say purpose on a radical poetry podcast, but perhaps one of the intentions here is to take readers on this journey and show them that they can still get away from it all, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
Without doing all of this or without sort of box ticking in this way or bucket listing.
I think that's quite nice.
I don't know, what do you think?
I think that's a lovely, inspiring message. And yeah, the following line on from that is, when you know, it's you know.
When you know, you know.
When you know, you know. And I thought that was really nice. And I guess maybe this is why we pilgrimage. It is for some inner understanding or to gain something, to learn something.
Well, exactly. And that's very medieval, you know, because it was all about what happened on the inside. You know, you could do this journey and nothing might change at all internally, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Presumably
you weren't ready for the journey, if that's the case, or?
It's getting very new age. Well,
it is.
And woo-woo, as they say nowadays.
Do they? I didn't even know that.
Yes, it's very woo.
Okay, so I think we've kind of answered a couple of my questions. I guess I wanted to ask you has it inspired you to go on a pilgrimage? And if you were to go, where would you go and why?
I mean, I'm probably the wrong person to ask because it's something I've been flirting with in my mind for some time. As you know, and as your listeners will know now, I'm already someone who is familiar with and interested in the concept of pilgrimage. Mm. Although I'm certainly not religious. I might call myself an agnostic, but that's about as far as it goes. And I suppose I've hesitated in the past because I understand the historical connotations of it, and it's something, I don't know whether it's inauthentic to do something like this if I'm not religious. This is me just being very honest now. Having said that, I am planning to move to Canterbury next year, so I guess that's a kind of pilgrimage. And I think I would be interested in the challenge, the physical and mental challenge of this.
Yeah.
And I would be curious to know what kind of revelations, internal revelations, that might bring as a result of having done this. Has this inspired me to do? I think it piqued my interest in it again.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of woke up that interest in me again. How about you?
I like the idea that you just suggested, came to me at least, which was that actually we probably shouldn't have really any idea of that we are going on a pilgrimage until we're on a pilgrimage and then we realise we're on a pilgrimage. Perhaps if we plan a pilgrimage, it's the surefire way never to go on a pilgrimage.
Perhaps, yeah. Perhaps.
What I'm trying to say is I'd love to go on a pilgrimage on my average daily commute and somehow gain something on each of those journeys.
And I think that's a kind of modern misconception about pilgrimage, that it has to be this kind of crazy, challenging journey. I mean, don't get me wrong, many of them are and were historically, but it doesn't have to be that way. It could just be a journey that you take, like I said, like Marjorie Kemp going to the next field over from where she lived, to her local church. In their minds, in the Middle Ages, that was a pilgrimage as well. So perhaps we need to, what's the word? Not rehabilitate it, but reclaim the term pilgrimage as a concept.
I think so, yeah. And I think that maybe that's a lovely note to kind of end on, reclaiming the pilgrimage in all of its many forms.
Absolutely.
Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on.
You're very welcome.
So Phoebe Power's Book of Days is easy to pick up online or through your local bookshop or library. And there are plenty of secondhand editions available. It features a map of the route from, spanning France and northern Spain. You have been listening to the Radical Writing Podcast. A huge thank you to my guest, Rebecca Newby. And an equally huge thank you to our production team, Alistair Robinson, Mark Dutton and Rob Adey. Join us next time for episode 2, where we'll be discussing Susan Howe's Icon Basilica with Rebecca as well. And as always, stay radical.